Last week, I spoke about come follow me. And actually, come follow me was the conclusion of a three-step process. The first approach we make is one of need. I need Jesus. I'm guilty, I'm dirty, I'm struggling, I can't, so I need, and so I come to him for what he can give me. I learn through that, and that's what he said in Matthew 11. Come unto me, all you who are labor and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. And that ability to find that comfort, I think I shared with you my come to Jesus moment last week of just feeling like my life was out of control and I was falling backwards, and I just so dearly wanted there to be somebody to catch me. And he did. He said, come to me if you're weak or struggling. In Matthew chapter 14, verse 18, again, this is reminding us of what we saw last week. This was the place where the feeding of the 5,000, the little boy had five loaves and two fishes, and the apostles were looking flustered. I mean, what can we do? We can't handle this. And Jesus' simple statement was, bring it to me. Bring it to me. And we talked about opportunities that you have, concerns that you have, designs, plans that you have, and sometimes the plan seems bigger than the ability, doesn't it? I love what Scott says so frequently, this funny little family, and look what God is doing through this funny little family here in the city of Auburn. And it's not because we're so good, it's because we bring it to him. They bring it to me. Whatever needs you have, desires that you have, aspirations you have, plans you have. I love what Paul said over to the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. And this is easy to remember, 2T11. 2 Thessalonians 1:11. To this end also we pray that you all, for you always, that our God may count you worthy of your calling, and watch this, and fulfill every desire for goodness and the work of faith with power. You bring it to him. See, that was our second step. Matthew 14:18, bring it to me, and look what he can do with your desire for good things. In John 10, Jesus told the story of the good shepherd. And he said very clearly, I am the good shepherd. And we don't live in that culture, do we, Michael? We read about it, and we think about it, and we understand about it. But they lived it. And they were looking for a shepherd, weren't they? Ezekiel 37, David, my shepherd. Well, there'll be one flock, one shepherd. They were looking for a shepherd. And Jesus said, I am that shepherd. But he said, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens. Watch this. And the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep, and he leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes before them. He leads the way. He's not driving his sheep. I saw one time, I was driving south on the only north-south road through the panhandle of Idaho, Route 95, and it goes right along the Snake River, and the Snake River is in a deep gorge at that point, and it's a very little narrow strip. They made a road on it. But here was a shepherd driving his sheep opposite direction of what I was going. He wasn't leading them, he was driving them. He's behind, pushing them forward, rather than calling them forward. In the days of Jesus, they would just call, and the sheep know my voice, and they come, they follow me, because I'm leading them to good pasture. I'm leading them to safety. I'm leading them out of the way of danger. I'm leading them. He goes on and says more about what is involved with sheep following him, involved including the when the wolf comes, the hireling flees, but the shepherd stands between the wolf and the sheep. So he says, come, follow me. So we come to him because we're broken. We bring our stuff to him because he can use it and do something good. We follow him. See, that was the progression that we saw last week. But and there is a but, and the but is in Mark 10, for example. Here's a bunch of sheep, us following Jesus, and we might think that it's all roses and clover and beautiful things and sweet smelling fruit and in the springtime, but in Mark 10:35, James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to him saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us what do we ask of you. So we're bringing our stuff to you. We want to sit on your right hand and your left when you're the king." And Jesus said, "You don't know what you're asking for. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink?" What do you suppose he's talking about there? Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? What do you think he's talking about there? Having the Last Supper and then being baptized? Not a chance. The cup of God, as Jeremiah passed it around, was a cup of wrath, a cup of God's anger being poured out on a people. So are you able to drink that? Are you able to go through the suffering that I am about to go through? He says, we're able. And watch what Jesus said to them there in verse 39. They said, "We are able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you shall drink. And you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right and my left, that's not for me to give. That belongs to my Father to do that." Now, everybody else got irritated with him, and I don't want to go into that piece of irritation, but I do want to talk to you about this. When Jesus said, "You guys are going to suffer the same things at the hand of your countrymen that I do, are you going to stay with me? Are you going to keep following? You're going to go through the difficulties that I go through. Is that going to blow you away? Are you going to keep following?" Look over here in Matthew 14, Mark 14. In Mark 14 at verse 27. Jesus said to them, "You're all going to fall." Now this is at the Last Supper. He said to you got the. I think Judas has already left, and so he's got the 11 around him, plus whoever else might be there. You know, Matthias and Barsabbas perhaps are there, and he says to them, "You will all fall away." Looking at his guys, "You're all going to fall away. You're going to abandon me tonight. Because it's written, I'll strike down the shepherd," Jesus, "and the sheep will be scattered, you guys. But after I've been raised, I'll go before you to Galilee." Okay, so here's Jesus. He says, things are going to get so tough that you're going to flee from me. You're going to scatter. Some of you might even deny me. Some of you might betray me. But you're all going to be scattered because I'm going to drink that cup. The one we just talked about back in chapter 10, I'm going to drink that cup. And I'm going to be baptized with the baptism of suffering. And so are you. And then he said, John. Thank you. But when I'm raised, so I'm coming back. Now, Terry, think about that. I'm going to be suffer for you, and I'm going to be killed, but I'm coming back. I'll be raised. In other words, this cup And this baptism is not the end. Maybe it's the immersion into a deeper relationship with God. I don't know what Jesus intended by that. But he says, I'm coming back and I will go before you. Chris, do you see that in there? I will go before you. That's the shepherd leading them. Leading them through the struggles. Leading them through the difficulties. Leading them through the obstacles. Leading them through the cup. Rather than having them balk. I can't continue to be a Christian if it's like this. But I'll lead you through. But Peter says, even though all fall away, I won't. But what do you think about that, Pam? With Peter expressing a haughty attitude, I'm better than these guys. Was Peter expressing what he thought his level of strength was and his level of commitment was? I think that one. That Peter is just saying, you don't know me, Lord. I'm up for it. And Jesus turned to him, I say to you, truly, that you yourself, this very night, before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times. You're going to do it, Peter. You're going to be just exactly, the pressure of the difficulty is going to blow you away from me temporarily. But just like Jesus said, when I rise again, I'll go before you. Peter, you're going to come back from it. You're going to come back from this difficulty. Now, you can't come back from a difficulty if you don't allow yourself to go into and through the difficulty, can you? If you shy away from it, then you've never been tested by it. You've never seen your resolve grow. You've never seen, Scott, you've never seen the roots of the tree get stronger because you shy away from the difficulty. Jesus said, I'm leading you through it. I'm leading you through it. And so following Jesus is following into difficulties. Isn't that what Paul told Timothy? I think it was Paul told Timothy, maybe it was Titus. He told Titus, he says, those who desire to live godly in this present age will suffer persecution. Not might, but will. You get into an age like they were in where just standing up for the truth made you a target. You have to make a choice. You have to make a choice. I want to talk here a little bit then about the reading. It's not in the notes. I apologize for that. But I want we need to talk about the reading from Hebrews 10. He said, I want you to remember the former days. Now, when you catch a sense of the date of writing, if it's Paul, and most people think that it is, might be Barnabas that wrote this, I don't know. But it was written shortly before Jerusalem fell. Mid-60s to late 60s is when this was written. And the initial persecution in Acts, you read about it in chapter 7 beginning with the stoning of Stephen, a persecution broke out until the conversion of Saul, and then it ebbed. But it cranked back up. It cranked back up as Jewish Roman difficulties and challenges and opposition became more intense. Persecution of Christians became more and more intense. And so that's what the people who received the book of Hebrews were going through, that second wave of persecution. And he says, you need to remember the former days. This book is filled with our theme. Hold on, hold tight, hold fast. Keep your confidence, keep your faith, keep your commitment, keep your confession. Keep it. Okay? So one of the things they could do is remember the former days. You maybe could think back to that point in time when you first embraced Jesus as your Lord and how deep the affection was. That's what he's calling on them to do. Think back when, after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings. It's amazing what a person can endure when they're newly enwrapped by a thing. Okay, but it can become commonplace. It could become jaded. A faith can just kind of, like, remember what Paul told Timothy? Is stir, kindle afresh. That word, kindle afresh, the gifting you have. That's like what you do when you poke a stick into a fireplace and knock the ashes off the embers. They start to glow again. And so I want you to remember what it was like when you first started and not what it's like right now, and get that fervor back. Partly you had a great, you endured a lot of stuff, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations. They were willing to go through the pressure of being ostracized by society, having their jobs taken away from them, being arrested and put in jail, losing all their earthly property. They embraced that because they were following the Lamb who went through the same at the hands of his people. He says, you were doing that. You were doing that well, through reproaches and tribulations, partly by becoming sharers with those who are so treated. So maybe your friend's in prison and you go and don't care that the public sees that you're going to minister to this person who's being ostracized by society. What would that mean if Jim's arrested here, and because he's a Christian, and that's the state of our government at the time, that just being a Christian gets you arrested. So he's arrested, and I say to myself, man, if I go talk to him, I'll be arrested too. Or I could say to myself, my brother's standing firm for Christ, I'm going to stand with him, and I go down and minister to him. You see, that's what they were like. I don't care what the public thinks. I stand with Jesus, and I stand with anybody else who stands with Jesus. He says, you showed sympathy to the prisoners, verse 34. You accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourself a better possession. Key right in here is that state of knowledge. If what I have in this world is all I'm going to ever have, I might want to hold on to it tenaciously. But if I am put in the position where I can trade my grip on what I have here to continue to hold on to what I have there, if I've got that in my mind, you see, then I'm going to be willing to just let go if that's what the situation calls for. And so you were welcomed joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have a better position and an abiding one. Therefore, he says, that's what you used to be like. Therefore, don't throw away your confidence. How does a Christian throw away his confidence? See, he loses sight of the shepherd who's leading him through this. And it's kind of like that picture back there, Peter walking on the water, and as long as he's looking at Jesus and seeing, I'm following Jesus, he was good. As soon as he looked around and saw the difficulty, he started to sink. And so don't throw away your confidence. You know, don't be looking at the challenges and the dangers and the difficulties and the other things. Keep looking at the shepherd. I will go before you, he said, didn't he? I will go before you. And so, therefore, don't throw away your confidence, which has a great reward, for you have need of endurance. What is endurance?
Stick-to-itiveness.
With the pressure. Deal with the pressure. Yeah, you just keep going. You bear up under whatever weight is on you, and you keep going forward. I love that passage in Isaiah 40, that you'll run and not get tired, and you'll walk and not become weary. And sometimes we can run through life, and sometimes it's just you're trotting through life, but you've got the strength of God. Those who wait for him will gain new strength. And don't you love that verse? End of Isaiah 40. So, or is it 39? It's 39. Okay. let me get back to this. You have need of endurance so that when you have done the will of God, you see what happens when you let the difficulties, the challenges, and I'll talk about some of these here in just a minute. You let these dis things stop you. You let them stop you. and you don't do the will of God. God says, I want you to step into this because it scares me. I want you to step into this. I got other things I want to do. God wants you to step into it and continue to do what? Follow Jesus. Simple, isn't it? He wants you to continue to follow Jesus. I will go before you. He wants you to continue to follow Jesus. And so, that you may receive what was promised. Verse 39, after the Old Testament quotation, I don't want to take a minute to develop that thought, because I'm looking at this need to hold tight, this commitment to stay with the program. This is my shepherd. I'm following him. It doesn't matter what's happening to me when I'm following him, because he's got me. The shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And so I continue to follow him, whatever the challenges, the difficulties, the temptations, the desires, whatever they happen to be. He says in verse 39, but we are not, don't you love this verse? We are not of those. We are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. And so I see this very optimistic termination. You might think that Paul was thinking lightly or poorly of this people. He is motivating them. He's encouraging them. He says, I know what you were like when you started. I know the challenges are here. And I know that you're not the kind of person who shrinks back. I know that about you. See, I know that about you. That you're the kind of people who have the faith to the preserving the soul, that will go through because Jesus went through, will follow because that's where he's leading. I know that about you. See, but we have these disses. What's all this? And this is, I guess what I'm about to give you is a bunch of dis information. Jim saw what I did there, and so did Scott. Okay. The first dis is, what hinders me, I get disheartened. I get disheartened. You ever have a storm in your life? Ever just want to get in your car and drive away? You're not going somewhere, you're going away from. Ever just want to leave everything and get out of town? I've been there. And it doesn't matter what the circumstances were. I just wanted to drive away from the pain. But I didn't. And you know why I didn't? I had this picture, and I may have shared this with you before, but it was a vivid picture. It is still a picture in my head. There are storms that will come in life, whatever they are, that will blow so hard that knock you off your feet if they let you. Linda and I were watching a documentary of a travelogue. That's what I'm trying to get, not a monologue or a dialogue, a travelogue, about the Niagara River. You know how deep the Niagara River is when it goes over the falls? And not more than knee deep, but it'd knock you right off your feet. If you tried to stand there, there's no way. The press of that water, only knee deep, would just knock you down. Sometimes the storms in life are like that. They just knock you down. Well, I didn't get knocked down, but I could have been. And here's, Michael, this is absolute God's honest truth. I had in my mind a picture of the cross of Jesus standing lonely on a hill and me hugging it with all my heart. My feet straight out behind me. That was the picture in my head. That's what it was like. I didn't go anywhere, not because I could stand what was I was going through, but because I held on to the cross. I held on to the cross. And it kept me where I am. Sometimes we have disappointments. People let us down. You ever been let down by anybody? People disappoint. I think I've disappointed people and sadly watch them leave. I don't know if they left the Lord, but they left the fellowship, and I suspect in their disappointment, they left the Lord. I suspect. Efforts to reconnect have been rebuffed, but disappointment is a barrier that we grapple with. So is that the fire you want me to go through? Is that the cup you want me to drink to continue when people around me disappoint me? Yeah, I do. Because what's on the other side is spectacular, and I want that for you. A third dis is discouragement. Setbacks, difficulties. Things don't go the way you want them to. I mean, I wonder sometimes, and maybe you do too. I see all the empty chairs. And I know there's sickness, but I also know there's disinterest. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the idea of being just discouraged, is the work we're doing worth the effort? Are we making any difference? Are we? And then I think about Jesus, John 6, you know, where he fed the 5,000, and the next day they all followed over Capernaum, and he said, you didn't follow me because you saw the signs and believed. You followed me because you ate the loaves and were filled. You just wanted something for your tummy. You didn't care for anything for your heart. And he told him, you need to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And he said, well, that's a hard statement. He was talking about his word, it consuming his life. And they all departed and left him. And he turned to the 12 and he says, you guys going to go away too? And Peter says, Lord, to whom will we go? We believe that you are the Christ and you have the words of life. To whom will we go? Peter and Jesus didn't let the discouragement of the diminished audience keep them from realizing we're going the right direction. Following the Lamb will never lead you wrong. Expecting different results than what you're getting might discourage you. But don't let discouragement keep you from following. Look at this passage in Matthew 13 and verse 32. No, that's not what I wanted it to be. 22. Yeah, that's the one I wanted. And the one on whom the seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, but the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And that's the problem of being distracted. That's the fourth dis. Distracted. Other things catch my eye. Other things are important. We studied in Luke Wednesday night about Mary and Martha. Martha was really agitated with her sister because Mary was just lazily sitting there at the feet of Jesus doing nothing, while Martha was so busy fixing the charcuterie board and getting everything ready for the guest. And Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the serving? And Jesus gently said to her, you know, Martha, you are worried about so many things. You got so many things distracting you. There's only one thing that's important, and Mary has chosen the good part. It will never be taken from her. Mary didn't let the distractions of how to be socially acceptable, I guess that's the idea. What is the right thing for a house guest, or for the hostess to do? Sit around and let people starve or get busy in the kitchen? And Jesus said, you know, your sister has chosen the thing that won't be taken from her. And this idea of being distracted by things Serving guests, is that, tell me, Terry, serving guests an important thing? It's absolutely important. It's a kindness, it's a graciousness that that's extended to people. And it can be made so important in our minds that it overwhelms the thing that can't be taken from us, and that is, follow me. And so we get distracted by what's going on around us. We can lose interest. We can just lose interest. Matthew 22, we have this reading here, 34 through 40. I'm going to have to learn to use bigger font because it's easy to read on the computer screen. Matthew 22, 34. When the Pharisees heard that the Sadducees had been silenced, they gathered themselves together. So Jesus shut the Sadducees up with the seven wives for one brother, or seven brothers for one wife. And he shut them up. And so a lawyer asked him a question, testing him. They weren't looking to see the quality of Jesus. They were looking to see the breaking point of Jesus, testing him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. Wonder, and we could talk about the next one, love your neighbor as yourself, but I want to focus on this one, because losing interest is really losing focus on God. It's letting God seep out of your heart. God is not all that important to me anymore. So you're disinterested. Why is it so important? Why is this the most important commandment you could ever keep? If you never keep another commandment, you'll have to keep this one. Love God with all your heart and soul and mind. Now, you can't help but keep the second one, because if you love God and see how he loves people, you're going to love him too. See? So you the second one is just a natural extension of the first. But I'm asking the question, why did Jesus call it the great and foremost commandment? Why do you suppose? Why did Jesus call it the great and foremost commandment? Yeah, this is the great and foremost commandment. Verse 38. Pardon?
Because if you do that, you don't even have to worry about the other ones. It's the only one. Everything hinges on that.
Loving God is the thing that will allow you to let him guide you through life. I mean, that's what it is. You get disinterested, you're on your own. You see how important that is? It's the love you have of God that gives you the guidance through this turmoil we've been talking about, through the difficulties and the challenges, through all the disses of life. It's that love of God that it's like the tow rope. My heart connected to his, and he pulls me through it. Come, follow me. Yeah, I'm following you. How is it can I follow him through all the challenges? It's because I love him. And that love keeps me going toward him no matter what's going on around me. He says this is the great and foremost commandment. In 1 Corinthians 16, verse 22, Paul says, if any man does not love the Lord, let him be anathema. Look at the word anathema. Ana means upon, and tema is the altar of sacrifice. Anathema, being laid upon the altar. In other words, you're slaughtered. You don't love the Lord. You're a sacrifice, but not a good one. A destruction. And I don't see that as a threat. I see that as a promise. If I love the Lord, I'm going to make it through all the difficulties. I'm going to make it through the challenges. I'm going to make it through the discouragements. If I love the Lord, I'm going to get there. Okay, so these disses are what keep us out. And you might say, I've actually started to look at the solution of the what to do. In Revelation 2, verse 10, Jesus said, don't fear what you're about to suffer. Now, think about this, Fred. Fearing what you're about to suffer makes suffer, or the thing you're going to suffer, the mountain in your mind. It's the dread, and it's the don't fear what you're about to suffer. Follow me, he says. Don't fear what about that. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I'll give you the crown of life. You stick with me. Don't let fear drive you to make bad choices. Stick with me. I will go before you, Jesus said. You follow me. Be faithful until death. That doesn't mean to be faithful if it costs you your life. It means be faithful whenever you die. Be faithful until then, even if being faithful costs you your life. The idea is the length of time, not the outcome. Be faithful no matter what happens to you until you die. So, what I would say to you, be faithful to Jesus Christ until you die, and you'll receive the crown of life. Now, that might mean, when he says, come follow me, that might mean walk through the difficulty rather than being repulsed by it. Make up your mind today. I'm going to keep following Jesus no matter how hard it gets, because he is the only one that has the words of eternal life. John 6. Where would we go? You have the words of eternal life. Continue to follow me, however challenging it might be. In Matthew 22 at verse 14. Did I just look at that? I don't think so. Matthew 22, 14. Jesus said, many are called, few are chosen. Now, they're not chosen because Jesus called them and said, I don't want you, I don't want you, I don't want you. They're not chosen because they said, we don't want you, Jesus. We don't want you. We want to do life our way. We don't want to do it your way. Many are called. How many does Jesus want to save?
Everyone.
How come he doesn't save everyone? Because few are chosen. Few decide, I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided, I'm reading the screen, I have decided to follow Jesus. Johnny's going to lead that song here in just a minute. I have decided to follow Jesus. Many are called. Paul said in 2 Thessalonians 2, it was for this, that is for salvation, that he called you through my gospel. You hear the gospel, you hear the good news, Jesus died for you. He's calling you. And many are called. But few are chosen because only the few answer the call. Pardon? Yeah.
Few have chosen.
But many are called, few are chosen because few have chosen. Good. In Revelation 17, verse 14, where we see a picture of the ultimate victory of Jesus over all of his enemies, the masses of the world armies. And I'm not going to go into what all that means, other than the masses of the world armies were against Jesus and his people. And it says in verse 14, these will wage war against the Lamb. Get excited. And the Lamb will overcome them, because he is Lord of lords and King of kings. He's going to win, but he's not the only winner. And those who are with him, called, chosen, and faithful. Many are called, few are chosen. The chosen get to go through the process of proving their fidelity to Jesus through life. And the ones that stood victorious with him were the ones that were faithful. Jesus said in Matthew 24, verse 13, those who endure to the end will be saved. Now, they went through a great conflict, a greater conflict than you will ever face, probably. Though, given the turmoil of the last 4 years, maybe not. But they were given over to, as we saw in Hebrews 10, given over to death, given over to prison, given over to just seizing their property. They're given over all that. You haven't faced that. They were called to faith that and hold on to their convictions. Follow me through the baptism of suffering. Follow me through the cup of God's wrath. Follow me, and I will deliver you from it. Or bail out. Many are called, few are chosen. Those who are faithful to the end will be saved. So what I'm trying to say, really, And it's an exciting thing to articulate that when we have come to Jesus, it's to be healed from our brokenness. When we bring our stuff to him, it's because we believe that he can make good come out of whatever is going on in our lives. When we opt to follow him, we're saying, lead me through life, Lord. And then we hear today that sometimes where he leads is through the same path that he took, and it wasn't always comfortable, Michael. It wasn't always comfortable. But it was the only path, as he said, no one comes to the Father except through me. Follow me. Follow me. And that's the message for this morning. Your life may be challenging. Your faith, you may wonder, is it worth it? Or is this really what God wants me to do? Well, get down on your knees and talk to him about it. Open your book and let him talk back. And listen carefully and hear what he has to say. But determine, I have decided to follow Jesus. Let's stand and sing.